I made a discovery this last week, and I guess I had it before, but it never sunk in. The discovery was about my daughter. She was the one singing up here. That we really ruined her Easter one year, and I'll tell you how. She was little at that age, like like a little tiny kid with little curly hair and pigtails, right? You can sort of imagine that, kind of pigtails bouncing as she ran around. She wanted a horse. And so when you want a horse, you're thinking horse, right? Big, full of horse, right? Hair, mane, tail, hoofs, all of that. Well, one Easter, we decided to give her a horse, but we couldn't afford a horse. You know, investment, the upkeep, the vet. So we got her one of, you know, those little horses where it's like a little fuzzy horse head and there's like little reins and a little stick, right? So she wakes up Easter morning, right? And she's thinking, you know, that her dreams maybe will come true this year. She's going to get a horse. Instead, she got this little furry horse head stuck on a stick. She's almost over it. She's 19. Okay, we had this talk this week. She's like, oh, yeah, it was terrible. Of course, so like if you're not a parent yet, you're going to make way more mistakes than those. Okay, I'm sure she has many other stories to tell us, and she's gotten over that mostly, I think. But the reason I bring that up on a day like today is, A, she got it on Easter, but also to talk about the idea of expectations, things that we hope are going to turn out, things that we hope are going to go the way that we expect. Because for her, she expected this grand experience. And what she got was this, you know, sort of tiny part that really wasn't even real and wasn't what she hoped for. So I don't know if that's you today. Maybe life is great and you have all the things to celebrate. Or maybe you're here and you say, you know what, it's not what I expected. It's not how I expected it to go. And if you're that person, you're going to identify with one person in the part of the Bible that we're going to look at in part of the story. Her name's Mary. And things weren't going for her the way she expected them to go. You see, she was a follower of Jesus. We know a bit about her. Mary Magdalene is her name. And she had begun to follow Jesus, and she had had a life that was full of conflict, spiritual conflict within her. The Bible tells us she had evil spirits. It was a spiritual conflict that rocked her all the time. And then Jesus came and said, I can take care of that. And so she, out of her gratitude, she began to follow Jesus. So as she followed him, she found that she had life and she had joy and she had excitement and she had peace and she had confidence. She had all of these things. And so she was watching Jesus closely. She was following him closely, but then they had taken him away. And this is, of course, part of the story of Easter. They had taken him away, and they'd put him on trial, and then they had crucified him. See, she knew him. She knew he was innocent. But she was watching, and watching in shock, everything that was happening. She saw him on the cross. She saw the horrible death. She saw, and she was even there when we read the Bible tells us that when he died, that there was an earthquake and rocks were cracked open and graves were opened and all of this, and so much so that the guards who were there said, surely this is the Son of God. She was there then. She was there when Jesus, the Son of God himself, sacrificed himself for the sins of all of us. She was there in that moment. She was watching. And he had paid the price for forgiveness for those of us who will receive that for ourselves. We can find that complete forgiveness. But she was there watching all the way along. She was there watching, it says, from a distance. Watching as he was on the cross. Watching as he died. Watching as they took him off the cross. Because, see, alive Jesus, this is the kind of thing she would have run to Jesus about, right? She would have gone and said, Jesus, you would not believe what's happening. What should we do? What are we going to do now? Because he had walked with her and his followers through all kinds of experiences. And they would have run to him and said, Jesus, what's going on? What are you doing? What's happening? But he wasn't there to call on. she wasn't having her expectations met either. She thought the experience she had with him was going to continue the way it had gone. But that wasn't the case. But you know what I appreciate about her? She didn't just wander off. See, she was there watching. She was there watching on that day. It says in Matthew 27, as evening approached, there came a rich man from Arimathea. You remember this part of the story? Joseph is his name. There's a lot of Josephs. There's a lot of Marys. Hard to keep track. That's okay. He who had himself become a disciple of Jesus. This is not Jesus, one of Jesus' parents. He says, going to Pilate, he asked Jesus, asked for Jesus' body. Pilate ordered that it be given to him. He took the body, wrapped it in linen, clean linen cloth. He placed it in his own new tomb that he had cut out of the rock. He rolled a big stone in front of the entrance to the tomb and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting there opposite. They were watching to see what was going to happen. That's where our story continues. She's watching, and she saw this incredible event at his death. So Mark 16 tells us, when the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, bought spices so they might go to anoint Jesus' body. So very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? Because they were going to go and anoint the body. It had these expensive spices. It's what you did in that day. See, they love Jesus. So they go to the tomb, but they know there's going to be a problem. And it's in these dark moments that things begin to change. After the Sabbath, it says, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb, and there was a violent earthquake. For an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, and going to the tomb, he rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. This was the second time there was this incredible earthquake. This is the second time this incredible occurrence had taken place. And then John tells us, this is where the story really begins to come together. John 20, verse 1, it says, early on the first day of the week, Sunday, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb, saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. So she came running to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, that's John, and said, they've taken the Lord out of the tomb. We don't know where they put him. You know what she used to say? And maybe you said this. She used to say, what else could happen? I mean, can you put yourself there? It's like, okay, so everything was really great. And he started talking about he's going to go and something about death and sacrifice. But, you know, it's Jesus, right? So it's all going to work out. And then they took him and he was in jail. And then she thought, well, he's going to get out. And then he didn't get out. And then he was on the cross, and he's going to get off the cross, and that didn't happen either. And so they finally bury them, and she's in shock, and then she's like, what could happen next? And this is what happened next. Because you can kind of put her in that place. Have you ever had that feeling? Like, what's... I bet you even said that along the way, right? What next? What next, right? Like, have you had this happen? Like, you have to, like... Like, I have some teenage drivers, so I have, like, a couple of cars that are more the scratch-and-dent kind. And if you have teen drivers, you know that, too. And then you have other cars that you don't want to be scratched or dented, right? But what I find in these couple of different cars is sometimes they'll have the exact same problem. Because it'll be like, you know, you fix the brakes, like, in my case, on the Tahoe. And that's not particularly cheap, you know, to get the brakes all done. And the next month, you take the Mazda to the mechanic, and you know what they say? Really got to do these brakes. And you go, are you kidding me? I just did brakes. Right? And so then you go to your wife, and you say, we're going to have to pay for the brakes. Right? And she runs the budget. Right? And she's like, right? And you go, what's going to happen next? And I think, well, maybe it's probably going to be the Honda. Right? Because I have like, you know, I have like four cars. And so, well, actually I have more now, because anyway, it's these cars... These old cars that are, like, you know, you kind of let the teenagers drive. And it's like I have like 20 sets of brakes. There's always one that's going to go out. You know what I mean? And you probably have this too when you have cars for your teenagers, right? But it's not the brakes in life that are the problem, really. Because we just let a car sit. We didn't have the money for it. We let the car just sit there. That's fine. We don't have the money to fix it. It's going to sit there and we'll work it out, right? That's not a big deal. The problem is when it's people we really care about. And they have a crisis. They have a struggle. They make a decision. Or when we have a crisis or we have a struggle and we make a decision and it's the wrong decision and we have to pay the consequences for that. And then we say, what next? What's going to happen next? If you ask Mary, what next? I mean, he's dead and he's gone and somebody seriously stole the body. Why would someone do that? She's crushed. So she runs to tell Peter and John. And it's really a little bit comical. She runs, right? And they never ran in those days like we run, right? She didn't have her shoes on or anything. She's running in her sandals and she runs. She goes, hey, you guys, they stole the body. So they take off running. And then she's tired. She's like, and they take off and they make it to the tomb. She's not even there. So that's where the rest of the story picks up in verse 3. They're all on the run. Their hope, I think, had been broken, but their love hadn't been. So verse 3, Peter and the other disciples started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple, John, outran Peter and reached the tomb first. They're like in this sprint to see who gets to see first. He bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but did not go in. And then Simon Peter, who was behind him, Then Simon Peter, who was behind him, arrived and went into the tomb. He sort of just dove in. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the burial cloth that had been around Jesus' head. And then here's where it gets weird. The cloth was folded up by itself, separate from the linen. Finally, the other disciple, who had reached the tomb first, John, also went inside. It's like, why would someone ripping off a tomb fold the garments nice and neatly? Why would they do that? The answer is they wouldn't. So they saw, it says, he saw and he believed. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. So they get there, they run in, they make the realization, something's going on here. There's something happening. They don't quite understand all of it. But they know that their hopes that had died are beginning to come back alive. Matthew tells us that when they went to secure the tomb, Pilate said, put some soldiers on the tomb, that even those people knew that Jesus had said, I'm going to come back alive. I'm going to beat death. I'm going to die, and I'm going to beat sin, and then I'm going to come alive, and I'm going to beat death 3 days. They even knew that, but these guys, it wasn't quite so clear. So the stone is rolled away. Why do you think the stone was rolled away? Let me think about it for a second. Why would the stone, like, because Jesus, if this is true, and I realize you may not buy every part, right? In this room, there might not be everybody who buys every part of it, but go down the road with me on this, okay? If Jesus was the Son of God and died on the cross, and then if Jesus appears as if we're not finished with the story yet, but beat death and came back alive, do you think a little rock is going to keep him captive? It wouldn't make sense, would it? Like he's stuck in the, he's alive but stuck, right? I mean, it's almost comical, right? Hello? Someone want to roll away the stone? I'm alive, but I, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Here's why I think the stone was rolled away. Because he wanted people to see. He wanted people to go in and see he's not alive. He's not dead. He is alive. Right? He wanted them, his closest followers, to come in and say, wait a second. He did say he was going to come alive. Where is he? What happened? It's the same reason why Jesus appeared, not just to one or two or 20 or 40, but to hundreds. It's the same reason why Josephus, the historian at that time, writes about it, that it became a historical event recorded by historians at that time. They saw Jesus alive because Jesus wanted people to know he'd beat death. He was alive. He was for real. He keeps his promises. So the story finishes. They begin to have hope. They begin to believe. John 20:10, then the disciples went back to their homes because he's not there, so why hang around? But Mary is still hanging around. She finally caught up. Peter and John were gone by then. Mary walks to the tomb. She finally gets there, a little out of breath. She stood outside the tomb, verse 11, crying. And as she wept, she bent over to look at the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. She looks inside. She sees the angels. And they asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" She's crying. She doesn't know how the story goes. She hasn't read the end. They know what happened, but she doesn't know yet. So she says, see, they know this is the first best day in history. It's the first best day. She doesn't know it's her first best day either. "They've taken my Lord away," she said. "I don't know where they put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not realize it was Jesus. She doesn't expect to see him. Some of you might be like that too. Life has not gone the way you want. And even there's a part of you that has even said, "You know, I don't know if it's going to help. I don't know if Jesus is going to really help me. But I'll try. I'll show up. I'll, you know," because maybe your expectations, maybe your frustrations have loomed big in your life. She doesn't expect to see him. We won't even talk about that. The fact that he appears to a woman is profound in this time, at this day. John 20:15, "Woman," he said, "why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?" Thinking he was the gardener. Is that awesome or what? Right? Like, "Oh, what did you do with him?" Right? She's like going to dress him down, right? She's going to be like, "Hey, hey, you," right? It's just great. She said, "Sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've put him. I'm going to go get him." He's right there, and she doesn't even know. Understand, this is Jesus. He's right there. And maybe you don't even know. Jesus says, "Okay, I want her to know." Verse 16, Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni!" His teacher. Mary, he is all he needs to say. Mary, right? And she's like, "It's you! He's gone from the gardener to God right there." Right? In that moment, it's like, "Whoa, you don't have a rake, you know? I thought you were just a guy. But you're Jesus." And suddenly all this first best day. She had her first worst day on Friday. Now she's having her first best day. Easter. Jesus says, "Don't hold on to me." Meaning, because why would he have to say that? What do you think? She's like, "I lost you once, dude. There's no way," right? She's like, have you ever had somebody just lock their arms around you? Like the biggest bear hug ever? That's what she's doing, right? She just locked her arms. It's almost like I imagine him saying it like this. "Do not hold on to me." Right? You're like, she's just squeezed the air out of him, you know? And he's not saying, "Look, I don't want to be near you." He's saying, "Listen, our relationship is changing. And that I'm not going to be physically with you. I will be spiritually with you for eternity. Every day of your life. But clutching on to my body here right now is not going to be the thing." So he says that. "Go instead to my brothers. Tell them I'm returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and to your God." And he uses this phrase, brothers, which is fascinating. He says, look, we have the same Father. He's the Son of God, God himself. We're not. We're the adopted sons and daughters. Right? There's a difference, but God is the Father for all. So she runs back. Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I've seen the Lord." And she told them that he said all these things to her. And on that evening, he appears to everybody else. And I love this because you and I aren't Mary, are we? I love it when he appears to everybody else. And you know what he appears to this guy, Thomas? Have you heard this, right? You've heard the phrase maybe in our culture, doubting Thomas. Right? Jesus shows up to everybody else. I love it when Jesus appears to the everybody else's because I feel like that all the time. I feel like I'm an everybody else. He appears to all this crowd and Thomas isn't there. Where is Thomas? Like Jesus shows up back from the grave and Thomas misses it. I don't know what he thought he was doing. It was more important, but it was the worst choice of his life. But even Thomas comes back and he says, no, I'm not going to buy this. I don't buy it unless I experience it for me. And you know what Jesus says? He doesn't say, you know what? You're too uptight. You don't have any faith. I'm not going to show up to you. He even shows up to the ultimate doubter. This is what Jesus does. He shows up to the ultimate doubter who says, no, I want to know for myself. I'm not going to believe it just because a bunch of other people do. You might be that person here. It might be saying, yeah, I think I am a doubter. I don't know that I buy it all. And it doesn't scare Jesus off. You can experience him for yourself. That's part of this whole story. So he shows them his hands and his side to prove he's no ghost, he's no phantom, he's the real thing. I want to tell you about my friend Mike. It's kind of a dramatic story. Mike Farland. Mike's a pastor friend of mine. When Mike was 19, he got so drunk. He kind of blacked out. You know, like blacking out when you're drunk isn't passing out. It's that you don't really know what you're doing and you don't remember it later, but you're awake and doing things. So Pastor Mike, he just barely remembers what took place. He was in a bar. He's in a bar and a fight started. And at that time, Mike was a pretty angry guy. And Mike didn't lose fights. So at the end of the fight, not only did Mike win the fight, but he actually took the other man's life. And Mike went to prison. 13 years in prison. In all those years in prison, here's what they say to people in prison. When you got a long stint, they say, well, you know what? Use the time. Improve yourself. So Mike's like, okay, I'm going to. So he gets a degree. He studies. He learns skills. He does all of these things. He gets out of prison 13 years later. Served his time. He gets out and he says, you know what? I got all these things. I got a degree. I learned all these skills. Why do I feel so terrible inside? Why do I feel so empty inside? None of that helps. Nothing on the outside helps. So one person said, let me tell you what helps. Let me tell you what transforms. It's a relationship with Jesus Christ. So Mike in his 30s, having done his stint in prison, he finally says, I'm going to try that. So he invites Jesus Christ into his life. And for the first time in his entire life, his soul is at peace because he's experienced the forgiveness from Jesus Christ. That's what Good Friday is. Jesus paying the price for sin. And then what happened next to him is his soul came to life. That Jesus imparted life to his soul as well. Not just forgiveness and left him there. But true life. So Mike tells the story everywhere that he can. He goes to prisons all the time. And he tells the story. And I tell that to some people and they say, really? Some of them can't get past that a pastor is a convicted murderer. It's kind of tough to get past. But you know, most of the people I tell that story to, they say, if Jesus' sacrifice earned forgiveness for Mike, maybe he would forgive me and maybe give life to my soul. See, Mary got to watch all of it happen with her real eyes. Here's how God says it happens, what we're talking about here this morning. It says, if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies through his spirit who lives in you. See, this is the great news of Easter. This is the new life of Easter. The new life that Jesus brings to the person who receives them and surrenders themselves to him. See, we're doing the series, right? Pursue, persist, and prevail. And we look at Jesus, and we see Jesus who he pursued the life that God had for him to come down to the earth to earn salvation for you and me. He persisted through the difficulties, the obstacles, the pain that came his way. And that's why I know he can help you with yours. And he prevailed all the way until the end. And he can help you do the same thing. So I want to invite you to pray. Because I don't know everything about your life, but I know what Jesus does in a life. So let me invite you to pray with me and to think as you pray. Most people, they concentrate better with your eyes closed. So let me invite you to do that. And it may be that as you're there with your eyes closed, and we'll invite our team to come on up here, even as you're there with your eyes closed, it may be that in the moment that you're there, you're realizing that you want to experience what Mary and Mike experienced. And if that's you, I'm going to invite you to pray this prayer in this moment and have your first best day. This is your prayer. Just pray this. Say, Dear Jesus, I invite you to come into my life. I invite you to come in and forgive me. To make me clean. I invite you to come into my life. To not just make me clean, but to bring life to my soul. And then say, Jesus, I'm ready to follow you today. And then others of you, you might be here and you haven't been in church in a while. And maybe as we're still praying, maybe your prayer is not for the first time. Maybe it's a prayer to come back. For you to say, Jesus, I remember my first best day. And I want that day again. I'm ready to come back on this day and live more of the best days by putting you back in charge. So let me invite you to pray this prayer. Dear Jesus, some of us come to you today. And we are ready to come back to experience new life again. Not as if we stopped entirely. But Jesus, you know we did in a lot of ways stop. So we come back to you to have a second or third best day and put you back in charge. And Jesus, we all come to you together in gratitude for forgiveness, in gratitude for new life and all that means. We come back to you in praise that all of our lives have been transformed, that you have brought life to everything, to our present, to our future, to our relationships. So we want to give you thanks and we want to give you praise. And ask you to bring all the life you want to us. In Jesus' name, amen.